heard about Anchor. It is the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. There are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your own phone or computer. Anchor will also distribute your podcast so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more podcast platforms. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So download the Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started today.
WC Football Talk, 143, sponsored by SidelineShop.ca. Guys, for all your jersey needs, no matter the sport, go to SidelineShop.ca and tell them Griff sent you. Well, today, guys, look, week 18, it's all divisional matchups. This game, it's meaningless for the both of us, but I had to bring him in for this game. It's Big Rat 310 and I. We're going to take you through everything to do with week 18, other NFL news. The kid is back. We're going to talk about our game. That's later on down the road. But how are we doing today?
Doing okay. Happy to be back. Happy to be back with you on the show. It's always a great time. Excited to talk about the week. You know, I had a tough Sunday, to say the least. I had a tough Monday, too, because a lot of the fallout from that game was pretty rough. But I get a little better with each passing day and excited to talk about it once we get to the Dolphins.
I don't blame you at all. I'm like the opposite, obviously, besides the 50 burger. My gambling didn't hit that well last Sunday, but I'm in a spread pool, and in that spread pool, I finished tied for first. I had a 12-4 record against the spread this week, but I lost on that tiebreaker. But you know that Baker Mayfield touchdown?
Yeah.
I lost on that because I said 27 points. I'm like, I just feel like it's going to be a garbage Monday night, like, you know, yeah, a 16-10 game, and they were at 26 points. They got a touchdown, and I was just – I'm like, really, guys? Really?
With, like, 1 minute left on the clock, and everyone knew that the Browns were done. Like, I understand mathematically they still had two timeouts and all that, but just watching the game, like, everyone knew the Browns were going to lose. That's crazy.
100%. Like, it was just – and then Najee Harris ran it down. After that point, I'm like, oh, whatever. So basically what happened was each week – it's a pretty big pot. Like, it's a $100 entry fee for this thing. So each week, basically, say if you win a week, you basically get your money back. So I was literally – if I had said, like, in the 40s, I probably would have won because the guy who ultimately won the week had he had 45 points as his tiebreaker.
Oh, wow. Damn.
The only ones I got wrong were the Rams, the Cowboys – the 49ers, and I just got to look it up quickly because I know there's one more on there, I believe. And I'm trying to remember which one it was. Just give me a quick second, folks, as I vamp. Like I say, we are live.
I will say, while he's looking it up, as I kind of mentioned on the show last week, I pick 5 spreads every week to send to my brother. I'm currently 58 and 43 on the year, so far so good. But last week I went 3-2. And one of my losses was on the Niners. And I was very, very upset because if you watch that game, the Texans very much deserve to cover. And right before the 49ers kicked the extra point, they were going to go for 2, and then there was a penalty, and then they were able to scrap the 2-point conversion and just kick the extra point. And if they had gone for 2 and failed, the Texans would have covered 12.5. So, yeah, that was very, very annoying. So if you lost on them, I sympathize with you because I did as well.
The last one that I got wrong was not the Dolphins. I got that. I picked the Titans to cover. Got the Lions wrong. I thought because the Lions are top. Like, they've only not covered, I think, 4 or 5 times in their season.
Yeah, they were 10-5 against the spread before that game. I initially picked them to cover, and then I pulled them at the last minute because I just kind of had a bad feeling. Just because. Like they rarely, like, it's hard for them to string, like, the competitive performances a few multiple weeks in a row. Like, we've seen this with the Lions. They'll be very, very close, very, very close, and then they'll kind of have, like, a step back, and then they'll go back to being, like, this week they'll probably be close and competitive, if not win, with with Jordan Love's Green Bay Packers. So I pulled them, but I pulled them for the Chiefs -4. And they also didn't cover, so it ended up not making a difference. Those were my 2 losses, and my three wins were the Steelers, the Ravens, and the Washington Football Team. That's right, because I got them at 4.5, so they covered.
You really zip tied that one together. Just wanted to ask you quickly though. So is Jordan? I haven't seen anything. So Jordan Love is the confirmed starter for Sunday?
I don't think it's confirmed. That was just my guess is. If Rodgers plays, I can't see him playing a whole game. Like, I could see him playing like a drive or two, maybe get a touchdown to boost the MVP race and all that stuff. But I think Jordan Love's going to play the majority of snaps. I do not know if that's confirmed, looking into it now, but that's just my guess.
I understand.
It's also kind of reflected in the spread, because if I'm looking at it now on my phone, the Packers are only 3.5-point favorites. That's got to be because they think Green Bay is not going to play their starters fully, because Packers would be significantly more favored than that, even on the road, if Rodgers was playing the whole game.
It's like that thing like where we always say Vegas always knows more. Like, I was actually I've been talking all this week, Danny and I, because we always like communicate with each other about gambling advice. And, well, for starters, the one him and I rode last night was we took the Brooklyn Nets when they were down by like 14.
Yep, smart.
And we both took it on the money line in the cupboard. But the reason why we're talking today was because New York, basically as of Saturday morning, mobile gambling is going to be legal there. So basically he can use like DraftKings, FanDuel, Caesars, all that stuff there. No problem now, instead of, I think, having to go to Jersey or casinos and do it. And he was telling me, apparently in New York, I think a lot of the books there are going to get people in New York to like have them just take spreads that, you know, the sucker bets where they think, hey, it's easy money, I'm going to win, but then it ultimately loses.
Yep.
Yeah, so he's saying like that's going to happen. But then with this week, though, a lot of the spreads seem like, realistically, I can't see too many upsets happening.
Yeah, no, I mean, we'll talk about our game. We'll talk about that later, because that's very complicated. But yeah, I mean, it would have to require, I'm not seeing a whole lot of sucker plays generally. So yeah, I mean, we'll get to it when we go game by game.
Exactly, and let's hop right in the saddle, because Saturday, the first game between Kansas City and Denver, I honestly love the Chiefs to cover 11.5. One, because obviously everyone here knows my Drew Lock stance. But the second one being, look, the Chiefs are still in that hunt for the one seed. And whenever they lose, they don't usually lose back-to-back.
I agree with you fully. And let me just say on this podcast right now, to officially end the debate, an apology to you, an apology to Miguel. On the preview show at the start of the year, we talked about wildcard teams, and my surprise wildcard team was the Broncos. Your guys' surprise wildcard team was the Raiders. Or I think Phil was on the show with us. Phil also made that argument with Miguel. And I made my Broncos case, and you more than anyone I know have been on the Fire Vic Fangio train longer than anyone. You were on that midway through last season. And I was still kind of on the fence. I was like, well, he's a good defensive coordinator. Like, let's give him more time. But I'm now closer to your side, and yeah, the Broncos are cooked. And the Chiefs are going to be playing all their starters. Like, if Teddy was playing, I could talk myself into them covering 10 points, but the catch-22 to that is if Teddy was playing, the spread would probably be lower in the first place. So, yeah, I think Kansas City has to play all their starters, because Tennessee is certainly capable of losing to the Texans. They lost to them early in the season. The game is in Houston. So as unlikely as it is, the Chiefs do kind of have to play their starters, and maybe they rest Mahomes for the fourth quarter if they're up by like 3 touchdowns, and maybe the Broncos sneak in a backdoor. But I would agree, if you're going to bet this game, it's either the Chiefs or stay away is my recommendation.
That's just my big thing here. Like, the only thing is I can see the 45-point under hitting, because, you know, the Denver defense is capable of stopping Mahomes. Like, if I truly had to put like a score on this one, I'd have to say like 24 to 10 kind of score.
Yeah, I was literally just about to say 23-10. And it feels like if you watch the history of this rivalry of Mahomes against Fangio, it's usually that theme. Like, Fangio's defense is usually good at holding them to 20, 23 points, but his offenses can barely score double digits. So yeah, 24-10. That sounds about right.
Last time they played, it was 22-9. And I think even last year, there was the one game in Kansas City on a Sunday night as well where the Broncos almost won. I think it was like 23-16 or something like that.
It was 22-16. But yeah, it was right along those lines. And there was another game last year in Denver where the Chiefs killed them, only because the Broncos turned it over like 4 times. There was a pick six. There was a fumble six. But yeah, the Sunday night game was also in a similar theme. Yeah, 22-16.
Exactly. My only argument I'm going to make right now is because I've seen people saying this a lot. Well, there's actually one positive I'll give to the Broncos. Look, I think Patrick Surtain's going to be a star corner for them for years to come. He's a I read it through PFF, and I don't remember what the exact number is, but his yards allowed, I think, is like well under 1,000.
Yeah. And he's the PFF's number two graded defensive rookie. Most years he'd win defensive rookie of the year. He can't this year because the winner is so obvious. But most years he'd have a good shot. Yeah, I agree. I think this team is talented. I saw Benjamin Albright was reporting that a lot of Broncos players in their press conferences this week, because this week they officially got eliminated after they lost to the Chargers. A lot of them were very upset. Like a lot of players on that team really believe they're playoff caliber. I do too. That's why I advocated for them at the start of the year. So I do think this is a good team. I think it's a good roster. I think it's a great defense on paper. I think their weapons on paper are pretty impressive. And their O-line is actually decent. It's not terrible like most of the O-lines in the league are. So yeah, they should be better than they are. You can blame Fangio. You could blame the quarterback situation, obviously. I'm hoping that they can get a Rodgers, a Russell Wilson, or a Deshaun Watson. I hope they can get one of those three, and then we can really see this team take off next year with a different staff. That is my hope, but we'll have to wait and see.
So this is from November 1st, but through 7 of his first 8 games, he allowed fewer than 40 yards in coverage.
Wow. Yeah, that's a great stat.
The only thing I'm going to say, though, about, like, I know that they're a quarterback away, but I'm not, like, some people are trying to anoint them, like, they're currently the 2019 Buccaneers. I'm not ready to go that far and say that you get a quarterback and you're in the Super Bowl conversation. Obviously, if you get, like, a Aaron Rodgers or a Deshaun Watson, it's a very different conversation, but I'm just not here to go stapling my name in March saying, you know what, hey, this team's going to turn it around, they're going to win. And with Fangio, he's a great defensive mind. It's just, when it comes to, they're just that team, they need that offensive mind in there. That's been my case since pretty much 2020.
And the last thing I'll say on them and this game generally, the Bucs, for all their problems with Jameis, this is always my argument when people say, like, Brady turned the team around. As you know, as the resident Brady skeptic and someone who just doesn't like those arguments generally, the Bucs with Jameis, they at least had with Jameis and Fitz, they had the number one passing offense in 2018 and 2019. Everyone can go look that up. In 2018, they had more passing yards than the Kansas City Chiefs did. Same in 2019. And so despite the quarterback problems, they always had like a great offense, a great passing offense at least. They always moved the ball, always. Jameis would just always turn it over. And they would usually score pretty well too. So this current Broncos offense is not doing that. They're not the number one passing offense in the league like those teams were. So, like, Brady was the missing piece because Godwin and Evans is an elite, elite combination, like best duo in the league caliber. And then they brought Gronk back, and they brought Antonio Brown back, and the Bucs O-line then drafted Tristan Wirfs, which is what elevated that O-line from being good to the best in the best in football, or close to it. So, yeah, I agree with you. Even with an elite quarterback, I don't think the offense, while I like their skill players, it's certainly not 2019 Bucs quality, where literally the Bucs, like, they didn't need Brady to be Brady. They could have had you know, the 10th best quarterback in football, the 12th best quarterback in football. They still might have won that Super Bowl. So yeah,
exactly. Like, I'm also looking at their offensive stats. Like, total yards, they're 19th. Passing yards, they're 19th. Rushing yards, they're 14th. But then points per game, they're 23rd. Third down, they're 23rd. Their best stat is points. They only allow 18.4 points a game.
It's a good defense. Like, their defense got better after they traded Von Miller, which sounds counterintuitive, but Albright was explaining it that Von Miller's leadership style is, like, very goofy. Like, and because he's, you know, the Super Bowl MVP, the franchise legend, all those guys, like, kind of defer to him. But he was saying guys like Shelby Harris and Justin Simmons, they wanted to, like, have strict accountability. They wanted to get after guys when they messed up plays and coverage. And Von Miller was like, come on, like, let's relax, let's be nice, etc. And Von Miller was the leader. And then when they traded Von Miller, they kind of were able to kind of have that attitude shift in the locker room of holding guys accountable just because of a different leadership style. And the numbers speak for themselves. Their defense was bad early in the year, and it ended up being, you know, as advertised towards the end.
Exactly. Like, that's just the whole thing. Like, this is going to be one of those teams in 2022 in the offseason where you're going to look at them and go, okay, can you make that leap and be in that wild card conversation next year? Because I'm still going to look at, obviously, the Chargers and the Chiefs to be the dogs of the division. Raiders, we'll get into them, but they will, like I said, we'll get into them. But I just got to get to this next game because we have Philadelphia versus Dallas. Right now, the spread sits at the spread's actually dropped ever since the Cowboys put more guys in a protocol. Cowboys minus 5, and the over-under is 43.5. This game is so tough. I want to go Dallas just because I think, look, they need a bounce back after last week. But I want to go Philly just because I feel like they'll have more readily available guys. And I have two hot takes I want to present to you. One is that Jalen Hurts, I think, is definite QB1 in Philly. The other, I think there's a chance that Nick Sirianni could be in the Coach of the Year conversation. I'm not saying he's going to win, but I think he should belong in the convo. Because like how you always say, they usually give it to a first-year head coach who's exceeded expectations.
Yeah, and what's his name? Brandon Staley was the perfect template for this. It's just that I think that Texans loss really, really hurt his Coach of the Year case. Like, they just looked so bad against the team that was clearly worse than them. And he's a defensive-minded coach. And often when they lose, it's because of defensive issues, which is different from the Eagles, where the offense and the running game has helped them out a lot. So, yeah, I would definitely give it to Sirianni over Staley. But I don't. Yeah, the problem is if the Titans get the one seed, I think Vrabel's going to get it because everyone's going to rightfully say they lost Derrick Henry. They lost A.J. Brown for several weeks. Julio's barely never played for them. And they still just kind of persevered and were still able to get the one seed. So I think that's what's going to happen if the Titans win. If the Titans don't win, then yeah, you can give it to LaFleur. You can give it to Nick Sirianni. You can give it to a few guys. So I don't disagree with that hot take necessarily. Hurts, I'm not there on Hurts yet. I struggle with him because he was legit bad the first half of the year, and they had to change their offense. And that's to their credit. It's not a negative. They completely changed their offense. They changed to being a run-heavy, run-dominant team. And my problem with them is that their offense in the first half is still they do this every week. They don't score in the first two quarters. And then their defense gets a few stops, and they roll on 10 unanswered. You know, they were down 10-0 and 13-0 to the Washington football team in back-to-back games. And against the Giants, it was 3-3 at halftime. They do this a lot, where their offense just goes to sleep for a half, and then it just wakes up all of a sudden. I just have questions about if the running game isn't working, can Hurts save the day against good competition? I'm skeptical because Hurts' biggest problem is that sometimes he bails the pocket too prematurely. Watch every Jalen Hurts game of my life is always the same. He gets forced out of his pocket. He scrambles to his right. And sometimes he throws a bomb down the sideline on the right side of the field to Quez Watkins or Devonta Smith. And that's how he gets out of a bad play. And that's fine and all. But I think when you have a bad offensive line, you could sometimes bail the pocket too prematurely all the time. And that's what I'm going to be watching with Hurts as his career moves forward, because his O-line is fantastic. Brandon Thorne ranks the Eagles' O-line as the fifth best in football. People think Jeff Stoutland is the new Bill Callahan. They think he's the new best O-line coach in the league. So succeeding under these circumstances is great and all, even though the definition of success is a little tempered. But I want to see it when conditions aren't perfect. So let's see what happens in the playoff game. Let's see what happens next season. I'm not quite there yet. I think he's a little limited as a player still, but we'll see. We'll see. I'm amenable to, if Danny's listening to this, I'm amenable to changing my mind, but we'll see.
My big thing with this is with them, if they were to lose wild card weekend, I don't think it's going to be necessarily a bad thing. I think it's just, to look forward to. I think if they say, how last year Cleveland went into Pittsburgh, blew them out, and then almost went to the AFC Championship game, even though it wasn't Mahomes and a quarterback, I feel like if they were to do something like that, it would almost hurt them more than it would help them. I feel like if you get into the playoffs, if you lose, it kind of leaves that sour taste in your mouth that makes you want it more. But then the further you go, because I know obviously they're not a Super Bowl team, my whole thing with them is just, look, whatever happens this year is great. It's just for next year. I don't want their fans to have unrealistic expectations. One, because we know how fucking annoying Eagles fans can get. Sorry, Bobby and Markeem. But at the same time, too, you want them to kind of be grounded and understand where they are, kind of like those tough pills that Giants fans are finally starting to swallow.
I agree with you. And like the Browns obviously is a quintessential example of this. And even my Dolphins to a lesser degree, I think they overestimated how close they were to contending based on last year's results. And the Browns did this. A lot of teams do this. So you definitely want to avoid that trap, especially at least the Browns hadn't won a playoff game in 20 years. Like, what does it matter if the Eagles won a playoff game? They won one a few years ago. They won a Super Bowl a few years ago. It doesn't mean that much in the grand scheme of things. And last two comments I'll make on Hurts. One, everyone should remember that the New York Giants, which the past month has looked like the worst team in the league. They look worse than the Texans. They look worse than the Jaguars the last couple of weeks. Their defense had their best game of the season against Jalen Hurts, not against any other quarterback. Two, Gardner Minshew, when he came in for Hurts, yes, it was against the Jets. I can hear Danny yelling that in my ear right now. Gardner Minshew looked as competent at quarterback in a very different way. Obviously, they ran a different offense, but they scored 32 points with Gardner Minshew. I think this offensive environment is underrated. I think the O-line is elite. The run game is excellent. The run game's been great ever since Miles Sanders came back. And I know he just got hurt, but while he was back, it was a big deal. Devonta Smith's a good player. And I think Quez Watkins is a really underrated player, too. He has 600 receiving yards on the season. A lot of people probably don't know that. So, yeah, and Goddard as well. I just think the offensive environment is really, really, really underrated. And I just need to see a little more. That's all. But, yeah, we can. I got nothing else on this game. How can anyone have a strong opinion on this game? We don't really know who's going to play. We don't know how – Nick Sirianni still hasn't committed to the Eagles playing their starters the whole game. We just don't really know. There's so much uncertainty. I would guess Dallas wins, but I would guess Dak plays because I think they should kind of care about being the 2 seed. And they have a very realistic path to being the 2 seed. But other than that, I just don't have a hugely strong opinion on this one. Cowboys, I guess. That's it.
Yeah, I'm the same. At the end of the day, I think I know I said Eagles, but I feel like Cowboys, look, it's just a safe play. Like I said, I feel like this week there are a lot of safe bets to make. No real, risk. If you can take risk if you want to, but I feel like if you want to be safe, go safe. And I agree with you, too. I don't think the Cowboys should take a week off, kind of like what we saw. And I'm going to go back to this because, look, we just passed the 2-year anniversary of my first ever episode. But within the first few episodes, Phil came on here and made the take about the Titans beating the Ravens in the divisional round 2 years ago. And that's what happened. So I don't want the Cowboys to do it because, look, the Cowboys go and lose wild card weekend. Yes, everyone's happy. Everyone's happy. But like I say this, and I hate to say this, but the NFL will probably be a better place for them, for the league, if the Cowboys do make a deep playoff run. I'm not saying they have to be in L.A., but if they end up playing on the NFC Championship game, well, for one, we won't stop hearing about it, and for two, it gives the league a little bit more credibility because, guess what, one of their top teams is in the Final Four.
This it'll be interesting, too, because if they don't make a deep playoff run, you really got to wonder about McCarthy. It's unfair. He's had a great season. The team is great. But you kind of look at them and you're like, well, how do you improve? The defense has been great this year. The offense on paper, I mean, when everyone's healthy, they got everything you need. They don't even have problems at tight end anymore. So it really makes you wonder. If they lose in the wild card round, is Jerry Jones going to panic and fire McCarthy? I really do wonder about that. So yeah, something to keep in mind as we go forward, but we can go on to the next game.
Before I do that though, I'll make there's a couple of points I wanted to make. One as well is that in my opinion, the better running back right now, Tony Pollard makes under $1 million, makes $960,000 a year.
Wow.
The other thing is too, I still think there's a chance that Amari Cooper is gone from this team at the end of the season as a cap casualty.
Yeah, very, very possible. And he's not been as involved in the offense as he was in prior years. Now, maybe that's just a coincidence. Maybe that's just injuries in a weird season. But something to watch, something to watch. I agree with you.
Oh, the only thing I'll say, too, about the Cowboys, because they pissed me off last week, was I had in the afternoon window, my now fiance and I had a five-team anytime touchdown parlay going.
Wow.
CeeDee Lamb was the last leg that didn't hit.
Oof.
Keenan Allen, Tyler Lockett, Alvin Kamara. I got to look at the 4 o'clock window again to see what the other game was. Debo Samuel, and then CeeDee Lamb. CeeDee Lamb was the only one that did not hit. It was – I literally placed $5 on it. If we had won, it would have been like a $200 win.
Man, that's really not fair. That's freaking brutal. My God.
Yeah, so that happened there. So that's how to say that about the Cowboys. Going on to Sunday now, Steelers at Ravens, and what probably I think both of these teams will be their last games. 41.5. Ravens are a 4.5-point favorite, but you know what? I'm going with Steelers as a 4.5-point underdog in this game. I know I say you don't want to be risky, but man, the Ravens just haven't. The Ravens were 6-2, and then you guys basically broke them.
Yeah, it's a shame because Lamar got hurt. But yeah, that is like the running joke. The running joke in Dolphins Twitter is that the Dolphins ended the Ravens season. Brian Flores ended Lamar Jackson. But Lamar, I mean, Lamar did struggle a few weeks after that. But, you know, he got hurt pretty soon after. We didn't really see a whole lot of him. So I don't want to make too much of a declared statement. But they haven't been the same. And I believe as of today, Lamar didn't. We're recording this on Thursday. Lamar didn't practice again. And the current rumor is that it's going to be Huntley again. So, yeah, we'll see.
My other thing with them, too, is look, if you don't go for two against the Ravens and the Packers and you kick the field goals, they're 8-8 right now. That could easily be 10-6 right now. I think you could easily beat both teams. And then even still, there was the game against Cleveland where they had the backdoor cover. But even still, the first Cleveland game they almost lost to, I think it was like 16-10 was the final. I think the Ravens, honestly, just they shot themselves in the foot this year. That's honestly what happened down the stretch. I know injuries aside, I think there was just a lot of situations where you could have won and been smart. But this is, I know you love stats and analytics and everything, but this is where not a stat. This is a place where analytics kind of bit them in the ass, if you want to say.
No, yeah, and I think it depends on the game. I think like because we don't know what would have happened in overtime for either game. I think it's fair to say in the Steelers game, you know, you're better than the Steelers. Like, why don't you just take your chances in overtime? You'll probably beat them. Like, I think that's fair. For the Packers, I kind of understood it more because, like, they were not projected to win in overtime against Aaron Rodgers. They were playing with Tyler Huntley. I know Tyler Huntley had been playing well in the fourth quarter, but still a backup quarterback. Like, I'll give you a great example. Geno Smith. For the Seahawks when they played the Steelers. Geno played well on the last two drives to send the game to overtime, right? And you would think, Geno's playing well. Geno's playing well. Trust him in overtime. And then in overtime, he fumbled. And that's how they lost the game. So just because Tyler Huntley was playing well the last two drives, I don't think that means, oh, in the fourth quarter, in overtime, he's going to be flawless again. He's still a backup. He's playing well. Maybe he has a bright future, but he's still a young player. What if he throws a pick in overtime or something like that? Fun fact, the Packers picked off Joe Burrow in overtime when they played the Bengals early in the season. So that one I understand because it's the best team in the league with your backup quarterback. I would take my chances on the two-point conversion there. But the Steelers one is different. I would agree with you. Either way, though, I think the injuries, like even kind of like what you were saying about the Eagles, right? Like even if they win a game, we know they're not going to win a Super Bowl. Don't lie to yourself. I think as a Ravens fan, and maybe anyone watching can disagree, you should feel okay if they don't make the playoffs. Because even if they made it, let's say they don't go for two, they beat the Steelers and they make the playoffs back in week 13. I mean, what was this team going to do? They're so beat up. Like, I don't think people understand just how bad it's been. They lost all their running backs. They lost all their cornerbacks. They lost key members of their offensive line. Like, they've just been so beat up all year long. They lost Lamar that, like, even if they got in, they'd get in. Maybe they'd win the wild card round. But, like, this was not the Ravens team that was going to go all the way. They're missing too many guys on too many key positions on the field. Like, their defense this year is awful. It's 27th. And here's your first DVOA reference, Randy. I know you mentioned it on Twitter earlier.
That was me.
Oh, that was – okay. Randy mentioned the numbers, and then you said DVOA specifically.
Yes.
Here's the first one. DVOA efficiency. Out of 32 teams, the Ravens' defense ranks 27th. It's the fifth worst defense in football. When have we ever seen that under John Harbaugh and Wink Martindale? This is not the Ravens team that we know and love. And then, as we saw in the second half of the season, the offense started to struggle. It struggled, and I think we can say this fairly, it struggled with Lamar before Tyler Huntley even got in there. So this was just not a Super Bowl team. So I really wouldn't, Ravens fans, I really wouldn't beat yourself up over it. Like, because of the injuries, the two-point conversions, like, it's all good. Like, this wasn't going to be a Super Bowl Ravens team anyways. Like, move on to next season, get everybody healthy. As for the game, I'm going to disagree with you slightly and pick the Ravens. I'll pick the Steelers. I'll take the Steelers on the points, though. I just think that the Steelers last week was kind of their Super Bowl. That was a very emotional game. The Ravens are not just going to give up here. Like, it's in Baltimore. It's against their arch rival. They're gonna get up for this game. So I think the Ravens win a close one. That's my prediction.
I said they'll take the Steelers to cover. I never said they were going to win. I'm going the same route as you. Or I may have said it, but I'm going to change it. You know what? I like yours. I'm going to go Ravens win, Steelers cover. Also, too, because I want to see a team still finish 8-8 in the 17-game season. I also, looking at their defensive stats, they're third in the league on third down still. They only have a 34% conversion rate on third down, which is still pretty impressive considering all their injuries on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, they've done a good job there. And, I mean, like, they are, like, look, they're well-coached and they're prideful. Like, you know, and they blitz a lot. So it would make sense. Like, on third and long, they bring the heat. They can get success there. The problem is that on first and second down, they blitz like crazy as well on passing downs. And they're just getting burned. Like, that's part of the reason why Joe Burrow destroyed them both times, because they sent the house on blitzes. Joe Burrow just threw it to Ja'Marr Chase in man coverage. And Ja'Marr Chase would just, like, or T. Higgins in the rematch game, they would both, like, just get, like, 50-yard touchdowns constantly. And, like, that really, like, beat up the Ravens' defense. Because without Marcus Peters and without Marlon Humphrey, I know this as a Dolphins fan, the Dolphins blitz nonstop, and they trust Xavier Howard and Byron Jones to stay in coverage. And you know this as a Patriots fan, too, whenever the Patriots send their blitzes. And so the Ravens do the same thing. They send the house, but the key to that is the cornerback's got to be good. Like, you need Xavier Howard and Byron Jones to hold their coverage. You need Marcus Peters and Marlon Humphrey to hold their coverage. So when you lose those two guys, you have two options. You either send the house, and then your backup cornerbacks have to hold in coverage, and they'll get torched. Or you completely change your defense. You completely change your identity. You completely change how you call the game. And that has risks, too, because none of your players have practiced that. So I think injuries really hurt them defensively in a way it wouldn't have for other teams. But, yeah, I agree with you. Let's get 8-8-1, the first ever 8-8-1 team in NFL history. Perfect mediocrity.
Exactly. Jeff Fisher is loving it. Cleveland-Cincinnati, I don't have much to say about this game. The only thing I want to ask you about this, so the spread is Cleveland -6, which I feel inclined to take just because of the whole no Burrow, no Mixon. But I love this under 38. Do you remember the Thursday night game earlier this year between Denver and Cleveland when Case Keenum started?
Oh, yeah. It was, what, 17-10?
Yeah, exactly. I look at this game and I see a 17-10, a 20-10 score. And that's the other thing, too, with Steelers-Ravens. Over-under is 41. I can see a under or a push, like a 21-20 kind of game.
Yeah, if you're going for the under on Browns-Bengals, the thing that you would have to avoid is some sort of shenanigans defensive touchdown by either team. That would be the risk. But other than that, I really like that proposition a lot. Like the under in the Steelers game, too. Steelers-Ravens games always go under. Always. Like, there's very few 35-30 games in the history of that rivalry. And Browns, I don't know. I mean, at the point that they're resting Joe Burrow, it makes me think that they're not going to play Ja'Marr Chase. They're not going to play T. Higgins. I don't know if that's confirmed. But if you're going to rest Burrow, you've basically given up. You might as well rest everybody. So the Browns are going to play starters. The Bengals are not. The game is in Cleveland. Yeah, I can see why six points is a lot, but I also don't know if Case Keenum is a downgrade from the injured version of Baker Mayfield. In fact, I'll say it. The version of Baker Mayfield that was beat up is probably not better than currently Case Keenum. So
I'm also just want to go back and look quickly, too, at the score history between the Ravens and the Steelers. There's only been three times since 2017 where each team has scored over 20 points.
Wow, that's crazy. Jesus.
Yeah, and the biggest one was in 2017 on December 10th when Pittsburgh beat them 39-38. So, yeah, but no, I can honestly, going back to the whole Cleveland-Cincinnati game, though, yeah, I can see the same thing where, look, as long as nothing crazy happens defensively, this is going to be, like, that type of game. Like, also, too, like, even what we saw with Cleveland a few weeks ago when they played, I know that was Nick Mullins, obviously, and fucker cost me the spread, where it's that kind of game where that game was 16-14, just, like, you know, an ugly score, low-scoring game where, like, nothing exciting happens. Like, I see a lot of that in this 1 o'clock window.
Yeah, this is why this week is both fun and difficult. Like, it's fun because, like, there's a lot of games with stakes, like the next game we're going to talk about. But it's complicated because there's a lot of uncertainty. We don't know how many, like, would it surprise you at all? I don't know what Belichick has said in press conferences. And we're not going to talk about the Dolphins now. We're going to do it later. But, like, what if Belichick, is there a chance that Belichick rests starters midway through the game? Like, depending on the score of the Bills-Jets game? Like, there's a lot of that going on. Like, the Bucks are a great candidate to do that. The Bucks are 100% a candidate to midway through the game to say, yeah, fuck it, Tom, just go back to the bench. So that's why, like, we just don't really know. Like, uncertainty is exciting in a way, but it's also, you know, unclear. So that's the weirdness about this week. Browns-Bengals, I don't know, man. No one watched this game. Watch it if you're a Browns or a Bengals fan. But otherwise, like, there are better options, man. Don't watch this game.
Exactly. And what was the next game you had on your docket?
Mine is Titans-Texans. I don't know what you had.
Mine was football team Giants, which was the first ever Danny Dimes primetime game of this past season. But you know what? We'll just skip through these next two because there's two more, and then Titans-Texans. Look, football team Giants, give me football team and give me football team to cover. Look, the Giants are a fucking mess. I don't know how to put it politely. I think Dave Gellman's definitely getting fired. Probably. Usually it's Black Monday, but it's Black Sunday night now. I think during the Sunday night game, you're going to be hearing news of certain guys getting let go.
It was, I can't imagine your mind when I'm saying, unlike a game with stakes, like the next game we're going to talk about, and you see football team and Giants, and you're like, what? What is this? Well, stakes for Joe Judge, maybe. The rumor is, Mike Florio went on Rich Eisen's show, and Mike Florio said, despite what was reported to the press, he gets the sense that Joe Judge does not have full certainty that he's coming back. Like, he thinks that's why Joe Judge went on that rant about, if no one's watched it, you really need to look it up, about there's no more guys putting golf clubs in their locker, there's guys that are begging me to come back to the team. And as Mike Florio said on the show with Rich Eisen, he basically admitted to tampering. Like, he straight up admitted to tampering. And the rumor is that Isaiah Wilson, their offensive lineman that they cut, like, had his golf bags in the Giants locker room this year in preparation for the offseason. It's ugly. It looks like the team has quit. And if Joe Judge is going to get fired, it's going to probably be because they just get absolutely, like, destroyed in this game. So, yeah, I would agree with football team on the points if I had to pick.
I think, though, if this is more than a two-score game, then, yeah, I think he's getting fired. And also, too, it's also what Dan Orlovsky called him being Timmy Toughnuts, which is something that a coach shouldn't be doing. I want to point – I know there's not a lot of talk about this game. Look, it's two teams that are just not good. But I actually sent it to Danny on Monday because we just kind of roast the Giants for fun. Where is it? It was a photo from – it's from CBS Sports. Like I say, folks, I got to go on the fly. I went a little bit past it. I am sorry, folks. Just give me one quick second. Also, I don't know if you noticed this or not, but the Giants have $3 million to spend this offseason, and there's like six players with 50% of their cap.
Yeah, and I didn't know what the exact number is, but they have like an incredibly large percentage of their cap devoted to offense, and they have the worst offense in football. They can't score touchdowns. Like, Saquon is one of the highest paid running backs in the league just because of his draft slot alone. Danny Dimes was the 6th overall pick. That's not a cheap contract. Kenny Golladay, they gave $20 million to. Like, almost none of those guys are there for cheap. Shepard is on his second contract too. Don't know what his average is, but he's making decent money as well.
Torrey Jackson on the defensive side.
Yeah, they like Leonard Williams and like they make Shepard signed a 4-year $40 million contract, so he makes $10 million per. So yeah, they have a lot of money invested on offense that doesn't produce results. It's a sign of a bad organization.
So they're for right now so since Joe Judge is there, they rank 32nd in all these categories: points per game 16.59, yards per game 296.8, yards per play 4.85, and red zone efficiency is 46.2%.
Yeah, and like everyone's just gonna blame Jason Garrett, and maybe that's fair, but we're gonna need to see. Joe Judge's argument is probably gonna be, let me get Danny Dimes, although I would get rid of him already. It's been 3 years, so he's had enough time. But if they bring him back, Joe Judge's argument will be, Joe Judge will say, give me like 16 games of Danny Dimes with a new offensive coordinator that's not Jason Garrett. And if the offense still sucks, then you can fire me. I think the offense will still suck because I don't think Danny Dimes is very good. But, yeah, that's probably his argument.
It's for our viewing pleasure and for to keep this podcast alive is why we want him to stay. with this next game, Bears and Vikings, I know some people were kind of had some blowback to Justin Fields starting, and my only thing to that is I think it's good for him to start this game, you know, let the rookie get some snaps in, let him get some plays in, because obviously he's not going to be playing another game for 7-8 months after this, depending on what he does in the preseason next year. But I still like the Vikings to win this game.
He is not going to start anymore because today he got put on the COVID list.
Oh, he did. I did not know that.
Yeah. It happened. It only happened like 4 hours ago. So yeah, pretty recent news. So yeah, I think Dalton's going to start. It's kind of a dead game. Both teams are dead. It seems very possible. How many games in NFL history in week 18 or week 17 can you remember a game where both coaches got fired when it was over? Because I think that very well could happen here.
Not many, but I will give you a fun little note, because in 2018-2020, the Jets and the Patriots played each other in week 17, and going into both those games, you knew the Jets head coach was getting fired. So that's my whole thing, is whenever the Jets and the Patriots play the last week of the regular season, a coach is getting canned.
Well, maybe next year that same will be true in the reverse, and Belichick will be the one given the axe.
Hilarious. If you, with some Patriots news for 2022, you should go back and listen to the podcast that they did on Tuesday, actually. We went into some pretty good and realistic insight with the Patriots. I'll speak more on it later. But, yeah, for this game, like I said, it's a nothing game. I'd rather just move on past it. Give me the Vikings to win with Kirk Cousins back, especially if Andy Dalton's going to be the starter. Unless Nick Foles starts, because that was an underdog spread I got right 2 weeks ago. I was very proud of was the Bears to cover plus 7.5 against the Seahawks.
Yeah, that's a good play. That's a very, very good play. They ended up winning outright. And I'm with you. Vikings, on the points, I guess. Like, who cares? Like, they should probably win this game by a touchdown. So, yeah.
I also didn't realize until today, or I forgot, that the defensive coordinator is Mike Zimmer's son.
Yeah. Yeah, Adam, what's his name? Adam Zimmer?
Adam Zimmer. And then Clint Kubiak, who I think should also be fired, is their offensive coordinator.
And I mean, realistically, like, I think they should move on from Kirk Cousins, too. I understand he has a lot of guaranteed money this upcoming year. But at the very least, they, to me, should be a contender to draft a quarterback in the first round. Kind of similar to, like, what the Ravens did, replacing Joe Flacco with Lamar Jackson. They're not going to pick that late, but I could see something like that, where either they use their first-round pick, or if they don't use their first-round pick, trade up in the back end of the first round with your second-round pick and get a quarterback then. Especially in a quarterback class like this, where there's a lot of quarterbacks, but none of them really project to go very high. Like, some of those teams in the middle, kind of like how the Patriots got Mac Jones. Like, that's how I could see Kirk getting replaced. I hope, at least, because they can't keep doing this every year.
But I gotta tell you something though. Did you see who was it? Ryan Wilson's mock draft from CBS Sports.
No, why would he have?
Oh, it was horrible. No, not there. I'm trying to find it, but he had Evan O'Neill from Alabama, who's still going to go in the top 10, going first.
Okay.
But then he also had like Matt Corral going in the top 10 as well, which I don't think happens. I think this is going to be like 2013 minus the obscurity and picks out of the league so soon where you don't see a quarterback go very early.
I think, and I also think this could be the year where we get another surprise team taking a quarterback. Like in 2020, that team was the Packers that no one expected to do that. I think something similar could happen here. Like everyone knows about the Steelers and everybody knows about the Detroit. I mean, not that Detroit and Houston are going to do it because we don't know if they like any of the quarterbacks high enough. But my point is we know the general people. We know Panthers, Giants, I mean, Panthers, Steelers, Jets, Texans, Lions, and in my opinion, Giants football team. We know the standard operating procedure. I think we could get a surprise, something out of left field, like maybe the Browns. I don't know. That wouldn't surprise me. Maybe the Saints, something like that. That's what I would say.
So for his mock draft, he had I do fully agree with you, though. I think we're going to see a left field team taking a quarterback where everyone goes like, okay, what the fuck? So he had Evan Neal first, Hutchinson second, E.K. Okwuemu from North Carolina State going third, Charles Cross from Mississippi State going fifth, fourth, but then Kayvon Thibodeau going fifth to the Giants, which I if I'm the Giants, I know they have the two picks that are probably going to be top 10 or at least top, I'd say, 13. You have to go offensive lineman with one of those picks. And then the shocker was he has the Panthers at six taking Matt Corral.
I have Matt Corral just got hurt in his bowl game, so I have a hard time seeing that. And I think the Panthers are going to try to get Watson. Now, maybe my team gets Watson, but yeah, like we'll have to see how that resolves itself first.
Exactly. And then also, too, the other one is you have Kenny Pickett going to the football team of the top 10, which I just can't see two top 10 teams going quarterbacks unless someone trades up. If there's a trade up, you know what's going on.
Yeah.
You know what? We can talk draft another day because this draft, I still think it's not a what you want draft. It's a need draft. Like you're drafting for need this year.
I agree.
But now next game was Stake, which we're getting into now. Well, actually, Green Bay, Detroit. Let's just talk about that one quickly because there's nothing much to say. But yep. I'm going to take Detroit to cover 3.5. If it was 3, I would go Packers. But I think at +3.5, I can see this being a field goal game.
Yeah, I've got literally nothing to add. None of us know how long. None of us know if Rodgers is going to play. We don't know how long he's going to play. I don't think he's going to play, but it's at least maybe not pass like a drive or something. And so as a result, we cannot possibly spend 10 minutes on this game. Like we just don't. There's nothing to talk about. Give me the lines on the points.
Yeah, exactly. But no, next one, Titans, Texans, Titans at -10.5. Looking to avenge that game, too, from a couple months ago where the Titans were a huge favorite, went in and the Texans beat them. I'm going to say this right now. I don't think that's going to happen this time. I think the Titans win this game and get the number one seed, but I don't know about the points.
Yeah, I would lean slightly towards the points. I think the Texans are going to give a good effort here. I think the Texans have been, let's say it, I think they've been well coached. They've been better than people thought. I think that's fair to say. And hopefully all of you who took them week one in your Survivor League pools, like we talked about on this very podcast, remember, and I did too. Remember, one of the things I brought up back then was we're sometimes overconfident in our ability to predict like the worst team of all time. I heard that about the 2019 Dolphins. I heard it about the 2017 Jets. I heard it about the 2013 Raiders. And we heard it a lot about the Texans, that this is like the worst team ever. And I think like we just overrate like our ability to understand that. And I think the Texans are another example of, you know, they may not have a lot of big name talent, but they got a lot of guys that fight hard, that are experienced, that know what they want to do, that fight. And I think they showed themselves well this year. And so I think they've been well coached. I think they've been better than expected. I think David Culley made the right decision to bench Tyrod Taylor for Davis Mills. I was critical of the decision at the time. And I thought he made the right decision because Davis Mills has been an upgrade over the last few weeks. And here's a DVOA stat for you. The Texans defense, we think this is like one of the worst teams in the league, right? Their DVOA on defense out of 32 teams, they rank 18th. 18th out of 32 in overall defensive DVOA with your old friend, well, not your old friend, like everyone's old friend, Lovie Smith. And then furthermore, they're 18th in overall DVOA. But here's another stat for you. They are 19th in passing defense DVOA. So this is actually like a decent defense. Like, you wouldn't expect it with their roster, and like everyone views them as one of the worst teams in the league, but their defense is actually okay. They get turnovers. They get stops here and there. Tannehill turned it over 4 times the first time these two teams played. I came on this podcast at the time, and I said, I think that's the worst game I've ever seen him play. So they played him well. Obviously, this week is going to be a different challenge, but it is an NRG Stadium. Give me the points. Maybe on a backdoor cover, Titans win by 10 points. Titans win 27-17.
I like it. You know what? I truly like it. I like all the points you made. I hate everyone who goes like, oh, I think David Culley's getting fired. And everyone's like, no. Like, everyone who's like, I feel like just a general minor wants to say something says that. But then all the football minds go, no, because for two reasons. One, he's done a better job than people think. They've won, what, four games?
Yeah, 4 games. They hit their win total, which is crazy. Like, people thought this team would go 0-17, and they hit their Vegas win total.
Exactly. And then also, too, Lovie Smith has them coaching. Lovie Smith's doing good on defense, and David Culley is going to be back. What I think they're going to do with David Culley is he'll be their coach until they're ready to contend, and then they'll let him go, and then they'll bring in a proper head coach.
Yeah, and I think Culley, I don't want to say that he was directly told that when they hired him, but I think when they hired him, despite the lies he told the media, I think he knew Deshaun Watson was gone. I think he knew the team was in an aggressive rebuild. And I think he understands, like, you know, he's been around a long time. He understands the deal. And so, yeah, bring him back, have him be the steward, you know, of this roster. You know, they'll kind of be similar. Maybe they'll win an extra game or two. Maybe they'll lose an extra game or two. Who knows? But they'll kind of do something similar. Maybe they'll have a rookie quarterback also. Or maybe it's just more Davis Mills. Either way, let him kind of continue to watch over that team. And then, yeah, I agree with you. Once they'll have that season, whether it's next year or the year after, where they're 500, right? They're like 8-9 or 9-8 at the end of the season. And then they spend a lot of money in free agency. And like that's when he's gone. I agree with you.
Yeah, I still think that is next. Like, it's 23 and 22. I would still say, I think their floor is going to be 3 wins, but their ceiling is going to be 6.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they're in the same division as Jacksonville still, so they swept them this year.
Yeah, which is our next game, Indy and Jacksonville. Look, I thought this team, I'm like, okay, let's see what they're made of. It's like Atlanta. There's nothing there. Like, I don't know how, but, like, Trevor Lawrence did not look like the Trevor Lawrence that I saw in Clemson. I don't exactly know what's going on with head coach. I've said this on this podcast numerous times, but the Cons are better at wrestling than they are at football. they're just not a good football team. They don't have anyone there. Like, I know they've drafted some pieces, but, like, still, like, their offensive line was just getting massacred. Their run game, like, I love James Robinson as a running back, but they have no one to throw to. Like, when Laquan Treadwell, which is a blast in the past, name getting receptions, I'm like, holy crap. Marvin Jones Jr., I think, had one catch. And I still think drafting ETN was a mistake. And here's the other thing, too, with them. I know there's rumors of, oh, hey, they're going to bring in Dabo. I wouldn't be shocked if in a couple weeks they hire a head coach and it's someone that is just not fit for the job, but it's the wrong guy.
Yeah, and they don't make good decisions as an organization, so you would project them to make another bad decision here. James Robinson tearing his Achilles was just brutal. Like, God, the guy's had such a good career so far, such a great story. Like, that was one of the few things you could cling on to. Hey, like, look at this diamond in the rough we found. And then 2 weeks ago, he tears his Achilles. It's just terrible. So, having said that, here's a stat for everybody. The Colts have not won in Jacksonville since 2014.
I want chaos.
What?
I'm rooting for chaos this weekend. Sorry to cut you
off. Yes. Oh, I'm rooting for big chaos as well. That's what makes the NFL more fun. They are on a 6-game losing streak to Jacksonville, including last year when Jacksonville went 1-15 and the Colts went 11-5. The Jacksonville's one win was against Indianapolis. So this is what the Colts do. They lose in Jacksonville. The spread is ridiculous. It is 16.5 points. There's kind of a rule in the Vegas betting markets. If you bet on a team to not cover when they need to win, it's surprisingly profitable, like for whatever reason. Like even if the Colts win, history says they won't cover. So I'm going to take the Jaguars plus 16.5 points to cover the spread. The Colts will win, I think. The Colts will make the playoffs. I'm hoping they don't and chaos ensues. But give me the Jaguars on 16.5 point spread.
I want to see them win too, just because also that plan of them dressing up like clowns and, you know, the whole Trent Baalke stuff.
Trent
like,
Baalke thing.
And with a Shad Khan mustache, like, I just want chaos. I'm with you. I'm going Jacksonville to cover, but ultimately I'm going to pick the Colts to win because we're smart football men here. Next game, though, we have another big spread. Jets at Bills. It pains me to say this because I'm rooting for the opposite. Bills win. Jets cover 16 points, though. Can I just say one more thing?
Go for it.
I just can't see Salah, like, you know, going into this meaningless game and being like, guys, like, we're just going to lay down and, like, let them whoop us. I just can't. I know last time they played it was a whooping. I can see a world where the Bills make it hard on them, especially too, considering Zach Wilson's playing a lot better and Michael LaFleur has really become a good defensive – not defensive, excuse me. He's been a pretty good offensive coordinator down the stretch.
Yeah, he has. Even Danny admitted as much when he was on the podcast with us that he's done a lot better over the course of the year. For those that don't know in the Jaguars thing, yeah, like Jaguars fans are wearing a clown suit with a mustache to mock Shad Khan for not firing Trent Baalke because they think Trent Baalke being around will prevent them from getting a better head coach. It's a hilarious story. Like, it's been talked about in press conferences. It's very legit. The fan base is very committed to this act of protest. So I'll be interested to see that on Sunday. And for this game, even though it's an important game, I don't really have anything to say. I think it's a division game late season. I think the Jets will fight. I think the Bills will probably win, but not cover. And it's just pretty straightforward. There's just not a whole lot to say.
Exactly. There's just not a lot to say. This game at 425 at first was kind of shocking because, like, I was like, okay, why? But then I kind of understood it obviously, and we'll get into it in a few games from now, but with our guys playing. So it's kind of like that battle for the division. So we'll see. But yeah, like, for as much as I'd love to see them lose, I'm going Bills.
Same.
Yeah. I'm going Bills. I'm just going to play it safe, go for the Buffalo Bills. Like, look, it sucks. But at the same time, too, if that were to happen, I'm really going to hope for that to happen if the Bengals do lose, because I'd rather go to Cincinnati and play them in the playoffs over the Buffalo Bills, because you know the Buffalo Bills are going to be looking for blood against New England. Meanwhile, I'd rather avoid that matchup wild card weekend. And also, here's the other kicker with that, too. I want to avoid that matchup wild card weekend because I do not want to be that Monday night game. I know it's going to be great, but I'd rather not give a shit about who wins that game.
Yeah, I fully agree with you on that. And the Bengals, I think you'd rather play Cincinnati too. Cincinnati's never been to the playoffs. Those players haven't been in that moment. You know, the Patriots still have a lot of players, especially defensively, that have. I definitely agree with you. You would rather play Cincinnati over Buffalo. And in general, you just don't want to play the division team. The division team knows you well. Anything can happen. I think you're in the right spot there.
I just think so too. Like I said, for as much as it pains me to pick them, like, I'm going to be the smart football guy here. I don't want to say something where it's like, you know, yeah, this is going to happen. This is going to be this. Or in reality, I know that's not the case. Next game, I'm going to talk about this one now just to get it out of the way, and it's Seahawks-Cardinals. Cardinals win, cover, I don't know, but I'm going to say this too. This is Russell Wilson's last game in a Seahawks uniform.
This is the game that I have the hardest time predicting, believe it or not. Like, I just don't know. I just don't know. I think the Seahawks could show some fight here. I think the Cardinals kind of – it wouldn't surprise me if the Seahawks win in an upset, especially if, like, San Fran's losing at halftime and Arizona knows they can't win the division. Wouldn't surprise me if Seahawks, like, kind of battle back and try, but – I just don't have a good read on this game. I'm going to take Seahawks plus 6.5 and just leave it at that. I'll take them to cover the spread.
You know what? I agree with you. I agree with you in the sense of, like, look, I can see them covering. I'm still going to go Arizona because I feel like Arizona's still playing for rankings where they have something to play for, where it's not like they're locked into anything. That's all.
Yeah, I get it. Makes sense.
And then same thing, too. This game right here, like, Panthers at Bucs, I don't get why it's a 4:25 kickoff. This should be in the 1 o'clock window. Give me the Buccaneers to cover 8 points. Look, the fact that they almost lost last week, we can see. Like, remember, you're going to hate me for this, but Patriots covered in 1 by 2, and then the next week they obliterated you guys at home. I can see the same thing happening here. Either they just obliterate the Panthers.
Yeah, that was a rough one. I certainly, no one in 2021 should be picking the Panthers to win a football game. Like, they have to show it to you. I guess it's 2022 now, but you get the point. They have to show it to you. They do not deserve your trust. This team is on like a 6-game losing streak. Like, they're falling apart. As bad as I've seen from any team in a very long time. But either way, you cannot predict the Panthers to lose. Actually, is it 7 games? No, it's 6. Yeah, it's a 6-game losing streak. So yeah, you definitely cannot predict the Panthers to win a game. I just don't know how much Brady's going to play, and that's part of this. Like, if I knew Brady was playing the whole game, this would, yes, like, -8, no doubt about it. I just need to know how much he's going to play. So I'm going to stay away from this game. Bucks win. If Brady is not going to play the whole game, if we get information on that before the game, then I think the spread is more up for debate. But yeah, that's all.
I think just because, like, you know how we were saying with Dallas, how, like, for seeding, I think the Buccaneers are going to want to get the 2 seed. So, you know what, you have as many games as you can go through Raymond James. So for that, I'm still going to think he plays most of the game. But this game wouldn't shock me. Do you remember the Lions game last year where they were up huge at half and he didn't play at all in the second half?
Yeah, yeah.
I can see the same thing happening, you know, where he just plays the first half and then he realizes, hey, I'm up, Blaine, go take over.
Yep, that makes sense. And Mike Florio said that Matt Rhule's seat is more in danger than people think. And so, per usual, like what you said about Joe Judge, it's like, if a coach gets fired, they almost always get destroyed their last game of the season. So, yeah, we'll see what happens.
Oh, Danny and I have been on that train hard where we think Matt Rhule's getting canned. I just think, look, that was a huge, like, David Tepper's just a very eager owner. Like, he's got a lot of money, but the fact that if he threw $7 million at Matt Rhule and then he's got to fire him after 2 years, that I think that looks really bad on the organization as a whole.
It does. And, you know, you got to feel for him. Like, he has not had good quarterback play this year at all, which is not his fault. Although maybe it is. Maybe he pushed for Sam Darnold. I don't know the full story because he did. People forget he did almost become the head coach of the Jets when Darnold was there. So maybe he, like, really wanted Darnold for that reason. So if that's the case, then yeah, that's his fault and he deserves to be fired. But yeah, it's complicated because him firing Joe Brady in the bye week, it just seemed desperate. It seemed like an overreaction. You say the Dolphins ended the Ravens season. The Dolphins ended the Panthers season. The Dolphins 100% destroyed that team. Like, Cam played well against the football team. The Dolphins were underdogs in that game. People forget. Panthers were favored by 2.5. And the Dolphins just destroyed their season. It got Joe Brady fired. Their offense fell apart. So, yeah, maybe this is one of those things where even if nothing is really his fault, he just hasn't really helped. And it doesn't seem like a guy whose players like him. So maybe that's reason enough to move on. We'll see.
Yeah, and then obviously quickly with the Antonio Brown stuff, because I'm seeing more and more of it online. So apparently there was a rumor that he had a girl that he snuck some girl
his room
the Saturday night. And she's going off on Instagram. She posted a positive COVID test. She had a lawyer from Brown contact her and apparently offered 10 grand to stay quiet. And then Antonio Brown called her. Her name, I gotta look up her Instagram. It's Ava Louise for anyone who's wondering. I gotta look this up more just to go and see, like, what exactly is going on here, because shit's getting a little intense. She is verified. He snuck a woman in the room the night before the meltdown. She said in that positive test tweet, though, at Buccaneers, test your team. She posted another photo of herself in a box hat saying, "Who likes my hat?" And then apparently she has another song who says, "What AB explained," called Puff Bar Pussy. In case you're wondering if this truth, which is understandable, Daily Mail cannot run legally if it wasn't, and because of my friend Jeffrey Kanye's credibility, this was heavily vetted and confirmed by editors. And then the league office has declined comment on whether if they are looking at allegations that he smuggled her into the hotel room. And she also tagged Tom Brady saying, "Wish you snuck me in instead. Don't be mad at me, babe." And then the last time, too, from the New York Post was, the Post was also hesitant, but also confirmation was 100%, zero deniability. So they also ran their story. Enough evidence was provided. Apparently, she had a text with the Post saying, "Unfortunately, at this point, no. My editors are hesitant based on your recent Kanye story. I'm digging in, but to this point, have yet to come up with enough evidence to convince them that the story is real." So this is developing, and this is fucking nuts.
It's getting crazier by the day. Like, that's just kind of the AB experience. Like, things just get all out of whack, man. Like, it's strange. It's disorienting. It's weird to think about. Very, very strange.
An onion where you just peel a layer back at a time. Up next, we have Niners Rams. Rams are favored by 4.5 points. I'm going to say this quickly, and obviously, I don't know if you know this or not, but I live with a couple of Saints fans, my dad and my sister. Yeah. So for this purpose, and this also spoils another game, I'm going to go Rams to win, but Niners to cover 4.5. I can see like a field goal game. Like not field goals, like a 12-9 game, but I can see it being like a, let's call it 31-28.
I think the Niners are going to win. I do not feel super confident about that. I think that's why I'm kind of clinging on to the Seahawks winning, because, and this gets me in trouble week 18. I think about football in terms of like what I think is fair. And what I think is fair is I think it's fair for the Rams to win the division. Because I think they've been the best team in that division. But I also think it's fair for the Niners to make the playoffs over the Saints, because I think the Niners have been the better team, with all due respect to your family. I think the Niners have been the better team. Here's one last DVOA numbers for you. In terms of overall DVOA, so not just offense or defense, overall DVOA, the San Francisco 49ers rank 5th in the entire NFL. 5th. DVOA says this is the 5th best team in football, only behind the Bucs, the Packers, the Chiefs, and the Chargers. The San Francisco 49ers are 5th in DVOA. So, I was actually reading the offense numbers, not the overall numbers. My bad, everyone. Basically cut out the last 10 minutes of this conversation, but it won't change that much. Yeah, it won't change that much. So, they have the 5th offense DVOA. 5th offense of 32 teams. Overall, they're 7th. They're the 7th best team in football, behind the Cowboys, the Bucks, the Bills, the Patriots, the Rams, and the Chiefs. They're the 7th best team in football. So I think they deserve to be in the playoffs. By the way, the Saints are 14th in DVOA. The Saints have the 4th ranked defense, but the 24th ranked offense. The Niners have the 5th ranked offense and the 8th ranked defense. So I think the Niners deserve it more, but I think the Rams should win the division. So in my just world hypothesis, here's the reality I've constructed. The Niners beat the Rams, but the Seahawks beat the Cardinals. So the Niners make the playoffs, but the Rams still win the division. That is my hypothesis that I'm presenting to you.
Look, the logical pick I'm going to go with, like if I'm picking logically, I'm going to stick with my pick, obviously, just because of family and everything like that. I do think the Niners, there's a very good chance that they win this game, but at the same time, too, it wouldn't shock me to see LA, you know what, get the monkey off their back, win a division, go into the playoffs as I think either the 2 or 3 seed. I'm just saying, I'm picking with my heart. That's all.
And by the way, like as a Dolphins fan, the Niners pick is our pick. So I really need the Niners to not make the playoffs, because if they make the playoffs and if God forbid they win a playoff game, our pick just gets worse and worse and worse. So I'm definitely rooting for the Niners to lose here. I'm just also acknowledging what I think is fair. I should last two comments I'll say. The Niners own this rivalry. Kyle Shanahan has won his last 5 straight games against Sean McVay. This includes the 2020 season where the Niners went 6-10. They still swept the Rams that year, last year. And they beat the Rams earlier this year on Monday Night Football. They have owned this rivalry. Everybody knows about the triangle in the NFC West. The Seahawks always beat the 49ers. The 49ers always beat the Rams, and the Rams always beat the Seahawks. So that's another reason why I think San Fran's going to win. Matt Stafford has 7 interceptions in his last 3 games. He's looking like Greg Rosenthal for NFL.com wrote, you know, he does kind of look like Detroit Matt Stafford, and that's not a bad thing. That doesn't have to be a bad thing in any way. So I think the Niners are going to win, but I'm not – look, the Rams are the better team. It wouldn't surprise me if the Rams beat them at home either. So, yeah, we can move on to the next game.
Which is Saints and Falcons, and I'm still going to go Saints. It's just I feel like this could be that game where – I don't want the Saints to totally give up if they're still, like, winning or, you know, like, if you know if they're winning, like, take the foot off the gas. I think, you know what, go out there and win. But I do know Saints, like, from what I've heard from my dad and apparently Saints fans, they would still love to make the playoffs, but at the same time, too, they know they don't have the team to go far. So, you know what, I feel like if they do miss, I think they see it, you know, it's not the end of the world. They can kind of – this is the only thing, though, for them is how are they going to rebound – deal with their cap situation again, because obviously we know, look, Mickey Loomis, cap wizard. It's going to be interesting to see, but at the same time, too, it's going to be very, like, to go there. And then with Atlanta, I think you got to burn it down. I think you have Terry Fontenot, you have Arthur Smith. I think even if they have a bad year next year, there is job security there. I think they're a team to do what the Ravens did in 2018. You know, you draft a quarterback, maybe back end of the first round, you trade back up, or in the second round, you grab someone, and then slowly they overtake Matt Ryan's job. Plus, two, I think that Calvin Ridley is out. I don't know if you saw that report today.
I did, yeah. That he and the Falcons are going to come to a mutual parting of ways.
Yeah. So then I think there's going to be a Super Bowl team out there, or a team that's a fringe contender that's going to pick him up, and they're going to just ride with him. But at the end of the day, I'm still going to go Saints to win this game, but Saints-Falcons games are super weird. They're either very, very close or someone's getting blown out. And in this case, I think the Falcons are still going to give them a bit of a fight, but at the end, I think it's going to be too much. So my phone went off. I'm going to go with the Saints to cover the 3.5 points. I'm going to go 24-20.
I have a very similar score. I'm picking the Saints to win, Falcons to cover. My goal, because on my book, it's 4.5. And I would definitely take... 4.5 because the Saints are either going to win by 3 or they're going to win by 4. Maybe there's sometimes they win by 7. But, yeah, to your point, the Falcons and Saints fans hate each other. Like, this is a legitimate rivalry. Like, this is in Atlanta. I think everyone's going to get up for this game. Everyone's going to want to knock the Saints out of the playoffs. So I think Falcons fans are going to be – they're going to rise up, so to speak. And I think the Saints win, but to your point, I think it's a field goal game or something like that. So if you get 4.5, take the Falcons. If you get 3.5, probably take the Saints, but it's close. So, yeah.
I completely agree with you. And now we're on to the game why I know all of you came here, and Big Rat, why I had you on.
Well, do you want to do Sunday night first, since it's the, like, leave that one for the main event, or what do you want to do?
You know what? Fuck it. Yeah, let's do Sunday Night Football first for the main. We'll save the best for last. How about that?
Fair enough.
Raiders. Yeah. Can I just say my bit quickly, and I'll let you go?
Sure. No. Say whatever you want. Yeah.
If the Raiders do win this game, I think Rich Bisaccia is. I still just don't see it being his head coach next year, but I want to give him all the props in the world for the crap, not the crap, but for all the off-field stuff this organization has been through within the last 3 months. You lose your head coach. Your star receiver has a tragic, tragic drunk driving accident that killed someone. And they still manage to be in this spot, usually when they're at this point. This game for them is meaningless, and they've spiraled completely out of control, but they're still fighting. They're still going hard. But at the end of the day, look, they're playing the Chargers. Both teams usually at this point give up a big game. Do I see this game high scoring? You know what? I was going to say no, but I'm going to lean towards yes, because I even remember last year that game on Christmas where Danny was ahead. It was our Christmas show. Danny was ahead. You were behind, and you had huge fantasy implications on the game. And the Chargers won, I think, 33-30 in overtime, or 33-27. So I can see a similar score. And I know I just pumped the Raiders' tires a lot, and I'm sorry to say this, Raiders Nation, but give me the Chargers to win 28-21. I just think at the end of the day, when it comes down to it, I'm going to trust Justin Herbert more than Derek Carr.
I remember that game last year. I had Keenan Allen in my semifinal. And if y'all don't remember, it was Thursday Night Football. And Keenan Allen was like not supposed to play. But then the day of the game, he said he was going to give it a go, see how he felt in warmups. And so he did warmups. And then he said, all right, I'm going to play. Let's do this. And he got like two catches and had 2 points. And I was so pissed because I and many other people started him because when Keenan Allen says he's going to play, you got to play him. And he ended up being on a pitch count and only got a few catches. It was so fucking annoying. So that was my Chargers-Raiders experience last year. Yeah, I'm going to sound like a total fucking hypocrite because I said earlier I view playoffs in the just world theory of just I want the best teams to make it. And certainly the Chargers have been the better team. The Chargers beat them early in the year. The Chargers' offense is elite. The Chargers in total DVOA are 11th. The Las Vegas Raiders are 21st, 11th and 21st. By every available data point that I have, the Chargers are the better team. The Chargers need to win this game. I'm just saying. I don't know, Griff. I don't know why. Maybe because it's Sunday Night Football. I think that crowd is going to be riled up. I think it's going to be very emotional. Because I think all those players, it's not just making the playoffs. It's like making the playoffs after what happened with Gruden, what happened with Henry Ruggs. I think it's just going to be in a very, very, very emotional effort. And I don't know. I got a weird feeling the Raiders win this game and the Raiders make the playoffs. But I can't disagree with any of Griff's football. Like his football analysis is correct. I just read you the DVOA stats earlier in this same exact podcast. I was saying I think the Niners are going to beat the Rams and the Seahawks are going to beat the Cardinals just because I think that's what's fair because that gets all the best teams in the playoffs. And certainly the Chargers are the better team. Certainly the Chargers defense has been really their Chargers defense is they're a worse run defense than they are a pass defense. And while Josh Jacobs is good. Like, you're more concerned with Hunter Renfrow. And there were rumors that Darren Waller was going to come back for this game. I don't know if that ended up being true or not. I don't know if we've seen any report on that yet. But that was the rumor that Waller might come back. So, but, like, the Chargers' their run defense is the worst run defense in the league. And I'm not that concerned about the Raiders' run offense to take advantage of that. And I think Justin Herbert can light up this Raiders' defense, even though their defense – they're, we should give Max Crosby and Yannick Ngakoue some love. They've had a very good year. Max Crosby made the Pro Bowl deservingly. So, like, their defense is not – their defense is definitely not the laughing stock that it's been in prior years because they actually get some good – they actually have a good pass rush this year as opposed to prior years. But, yeah, I don't know what it is. I really don't know what it is. Maybe I'm just being a pro wrestling fan, but like Vegas, the crowd, the emotion of everything they've been through. For whatever reason, I think it's going to be like week one, Raiders-Ravens, where the Raiders look like the worst team the entire game, and then they just kind of emotionally win the game in overtime when they're not supposed to. I just kind of have a similar feeling here. So yeah, for completely pro wrestling and storytelling reasons and not actual football, give me the Raiders.
You know what? I love it. I can see the Raiders winning just being that super emotional win that like, and you know what? I can see them like, say if they get into the seventh seed, I know they got killed by them twice, but the Chiefs are the, I've been saying this and I'm saving this take for the podcast. It would not shock me to see the Kansas City Chiefs losing the wild card round.
Yeah. No, I mean, they've had stretches where their offenses look terrible. They've had stretches where their defenses look terrible. Their floor is pretty low. Their ceiling is as high as anybody in football. It's winning the Super Bowl, but their floor is pretty low. No doubt about that.
Can I add one point? What I could see Kansas City doing in the playoffs, though.
Go for it.
Their season this year has kind of reminded me of what the Seattle Seahawks were last year, and you know how the Seattle Seahawks lost. Like they looked bad in the wild card round against there. Now I'm not saying that next year the Chiefs are going to be on the playoff picture on the outside looking into the playoffs. No, I think they're going to be in the playoffs every year. I'm just saying. And also, I'm going to say this too. I think the Chiefs losing in the playoffs before the championship game is better for them than making it all those years. Because look, if you even if you make it, you're always going to have those expectations. Look at them this year when they were 3-4 and no one had anything to say with them, and then they rang off 7 in a row. I'm just saying, losing is not always a bad thing.
Yep, don't disagree. Curious to see what they do next week. I mean, to everyone listening, the Chargers probably will win, but yeah, I'm giving you the storytelling aesthetic on the Raiders, and that's all I got for you. And then, yeah, hopefully it should be a fun game. More than anything, it's Sunday night. Last year's Sunday night game was a disaster with the Eagles tanking against the Washington football team. Hopefully they make it up to us, because normally this is one of my favorite games of the year. You know, like last regular season game, all the playoff stakes on the line. We know the whole playoff picture. I usually look forward to this game. And like Seahawks San Francisco 2 years ago, when Dre Greenlaw tackled Jacob Hollister short of the goal line. I actually have a picture of that on my laptop, a screenshot of that tackle that I keep with me just because I love that play so much. So hopefully we get a good game more than anything.
That's my only hope. Look, I just want a good game Sunday night. I want a good high-scoring game. That's what I want. But anyway, now, the reason why you're here. I'm going to let you go. I'm going to let you speak for this one. I'm going to give my... win Dolphins plus 6.5.
Yeah, that seems fair and reasonable. Let me just kind of summarize like my usual 10-minute Dolphin soliloquy, but I'll summarize it more succinctly here. I just want to convey to the viewers, this game matters. This game matters a lot for the Dolphins. It's easy to think that it doesn't for people out there because they got eliminated from the playoffs. I think this game is very important for Tua Tagovailoa. I think this game is very important for Brian Flores. I think this game is very important for Chris Greer. The Dolphins can either go 9-8 or 8-9. And most Dolphin fans agree, the tone of the season seems completely different depending on the result of this game. Like if they go 9-8, it becomes, okay, you were a good team. You had the 7-game winning streak. They dominated all those teams that they beat. That's what drives me crazy. It's like, yes, they beat a bunch of bad quarterbacks. Almost none of those games were close. Almost all of those games they won by double digits. Like, yes, the Jets game was the exception. But the first Jets game, they had a 10-point lead until the Jets kicked a field goal at the end and didn't recover the onside kick to narrow it to 7. And the second Jets game, the Dolphins were clearly the better team in the second half. Tua threw a terrible pick 6. And then he threw a touchdown pass the very next drive to make it a 7-point win. But yeah, like, they destroyed those teams. They destroyed the Panthers. They destroyed the Saints. They beat up on the Giants pretty good. Like, they destroyed the Ravens on Thursday Night Football. Destroyed is probably a loose term, but they beat the Ravens pretty solidly on Thursday Night Football. So none of those games, they did not squeak by. Like, the Bills, I mean, the Bengals and the Titans lost to the Jets outright. The Bucs struggled with the Jets until they stole the game in the fourth quarter. And yet the Dolphins beat them twice, and everyone just laughs at them. Like, oh, look how stupid and terrible this team is. I think they're a good team. The story I tell myself is they're a good team. They had a lot of really bad injuries early in the season. Obviously, they lost Tua for 4 games. And they lost Xavier Howard and Byron Jones when they lost to the Jaguars. And that's a big deal because kind of like we said earlier in the Ravens game, when you lose your elite cornerbacks, you either stop blitzing and play a defensive style that is unfamiliar to all your players, or you keep blitzing but rely with bad cornerbacks to recover for you. So the Ravens chose the latter. They decided to keep blitzing with their backup cornerbacks, and their backup cornerbacks got torched. The Dolphins did the former in that Jaguars game in London. They played a lot of zone. They did not blitz all that often against Trevor Lawrence. They played a lot of zone. They tried to confuse him with coverage looks. They were trying to protect their cornerbacks because they knew without Byron Jones or Xavier Howard, they couldn't play the way they normally play. And I think if even one of those guys was healthy, they would have stuck to the scheme they've stuck with all year. And then we would have had a different result, but they didn't. The Jaguars and Trevor Lawrence had their best game of the season against the Dolphins that week. If I remember correctly, and I'd have to look this up to check, I believe that is the most amount of points the Jacksonville Jaguars have scored all season. Certainly up there. I'm looking through it now. And that checks out. That actually, they scored 23 points against us. They scored 21 points against the 21 points against the Bengals on that Thursday night game that they almost won. So yeah, they had basically their best offensive performance against the Miami Dolphins. So the story I tell myself is they were injured with Tua. They lost all those games with Tua. Like, there's a good point that's often made in South Florida media. We get no credit for beating backup quarterbacks, right? Because they're backup quarterbacks. They suck. Who cares if you beat Cam Newton, even though the Panthers were favored in that game? Who cares if you beat Mike Glennon? Who cares if you beat Ian Book? Even though the Dolphins were only 3-point favorites after Book was declared the starter. After Book was declared the starter, they were still only 3-point favorites. They were not plus 15 in that game or minus 15 in that game. Like, everyone acts like, oh, it was obvious we would have blown out the Saints this whole time. Bullshit. Bullshit. I don't buy that for a second. They were only 3-point favorites. A lot of people didn't see it that way. So this, why do the Dolphins get no credit for beating backup quarterbacks? But when they lose with their backup quarterback, they get all the blame. When they start the season 1-4 and they lose 4 games with Jacoby Brissett, they don't get any slack for that. Like, if apparently beating backup quarterbacks is so easy and so meaningless, then why do the Dolphins not get any slack for losing 4 games with their backup quarterback? You can't have it both ways. The Dolphins' 4 losses can't all count with their backup, but then all their wins against backup quarterbacks are meaningless. That doesn't make any sense to me. So I think this is a good team. I think they were fucked with injuries. They were unlucky in close games. They were like 1-3 in close games early in the season. They could have beaten the Raiders. They could have beaten the Jaguars. They could have beaten the Falcons. Those were all nail-biter games. Nail-biter games, all 3 of them. And instead of going 1-2 in those games or 2-1, the Dolphins went 0-3. And I think that's just bad luck in close games. I don't think that really means anything. So I think this is a good team. They didn't look like it on Sunday, obviously. They play a lot better at home. So I do think being in Hard Rock does matter. I think the fans are going to get up for this game. Playing New England is always fun. There's a lot of New England fans that go to that stadium every year. As you know, Griff, no one wants to live in that part of the country at this time of the year. I know you're north of the border, but nonetheless, like, you can understand. You probably have talked to many of Patriots fans who are not like loving life in December and January. And so they all want to be down here in sunny Florida. And so I think the Dolphins fans are going to get up for this game, but it really does feel like the tone of the season changes. And let me tell you, if they quit and they lose like 30-7, because we know the Patriots are going to play their starters. I don't know if Bill has addressed, maybe you can correct me. I don't know if he's addressed whether they play the whole game or not. I don't know. I would presume so, because they could still win the division if the Bills lose. But yeah, the tone, if they quit and they lose 30-7, and Dolphin fans are worried about this because we've seen this story before. The third year of Adam Gase, the Miami Miracle happens, right? Great, awesome, incredible win. The next week, they go play the Vikings in Minnesota. And if they win that game, they really have a good chance of keeping their playoff streak hopes alive. They go to Minnesota. They get killed. They get killed in Minnesota. Very similar to how they lost to the Titans, 40-17. Like, got beat up physically and all that stuff. The next week, they played the Jaguars at home. They weren't even eliminated from the playoffs then, but it was just like pretty unlikely, largely. They go home against the Jaguars, a Jaguars team that had lost like 7 straight games, and they lost by double digits. They lost 17-7. And then the last week of the season at Buffalo, they got destroyed. The players quit on Adam Gase, and Adam Gase got fired. And so if they quit, and if they lose 30-7, I just think there could be changes coming. You know, we've seen that rumor about Jim Harbaugh wanting to come back to the NFL. To those who don't know the history, Stephen Ross tried to recruit Jim Harbaugh in 2011 while Tony Sparano was still the Dolphins coach. He literally flew with Jeff Ireland to interview Jim Harbaugh at Stanford before he fired Tony Sparano. Like, he was actively recruiting Harbaugh. Harbaugh is the head coach at Michigan. Steve Ross is like the main donor at Michigan. He's basically Jim Harbaugh's boss. It's called the Ross School of Business. Like, Steve Ross loves Jim Harbaugh. And if Jim Harbaugh is serious about coming to the NFL, I think Steve Ross is going to be very, very tempted to make sure that he at least comes to play for his team. And I'm not saying Brian Flores is on the hot seat. I don't think so. I think more likely than not, the Dolphins either lose this game close or they win, and Brian Flores comes back. By all accounts, like, he had a 7-game win streak. By all accounts, that's what's going to happen. But if they get destroyed, they get destroyed at home in front of their home fans. I don't know. I really don't know. Because Harbaugh is like the one guy I think he would fire Brian Flores for. So that is something to watch. So I do think I haven't mentioned him a whole lot, but obviously this game matters for Tua. You know, he played terrible last week. I'll be the first one to tell you. I'll be the first one to tell you he hasn't played that well the last few weeks. Now, where we differ is I don't think that defines his whole season. I think if you look at his whole season and a lot of the statistics, he ranks as about the 19th best quarterback in the NFL right now, which I think is reasonable. That makes sense to me. And I think that's encouraging. He improved from year one to year two. I think he's already better than guys like Sam Darnold and Daniel Jones. Those guys got 3 years with their teams. Tua's already better than both of them in only 20 games started. So I'm not saying 19th quarterback in the NFL is where you want to be, but I think it's a starting point. I think it's a building block. I don't think he's a finished product. I think he can get better and improve with time. So I think he's done enough to give himself more time, to give himself another year. It'll bother me if they get rid of him so quickly, because I just see so many bad quarterbacks around the league keep getting chance after chance after chance after chance after chance. Like Baker Mayfield, his second year in the league, was far worse than Tua. He led the league in interceptions. He was horrible. He got a third year, and he actually played pretty well his third year. And then he was terrible again this year after he got hurt. But it would annoy me, not just as a Dolphins fan, but as a fan of the Tua, having followed his career for so long, it would annoy me that he doesn't get a real fair chance, that he doesn't get as much time as these other terrible quarterbacks around the league that I watch every Sunday who keep getting multiple chances. Like, it would annoy me if he doesn't get that similar grace offered to him. We're going to find out in this game, do the players want to play for Brian Flores? Do the players want to play for Tua? Because the players aren't stupid. Everything I just told you, they know as well. They see it on a day-to-day basis. The Deshaun Watson rumors already started up again here in South Florida. Like, not even from any national sources. Like, there's no info whatsoever. It's just it's a natural conversation point. They got eliminated from the playoffs. Now it's time to talk about the Watson thing again. I don't want to talk about the Watson thing on this show. I find the conversation exhausting. I've talked about it a million times. Like, when actual news is going down in January, February, and March, I'm happy to talk about it again then. But I don't want to talk about it now. Nothing's really changed. It's the same old, same old. Yes, as a football player, I recognize it is very likely that Tua will never be as good as Deshaun Watson is. I have never denied that. I understand that. Like, the baggage is too much to deal with. It's a non-starter for me. I don't want him. I don't want him no matter what. Would I trade Tua for Aaron Rodgers? Yeah, I would. Because Rodgers would probably get you to a Super Bowl, like right now. Would I trade Tua for Russell Wilson? No, I would not. Because Russell Wilson costs you $40 million. And at some point, Russell Wilson's bad games have to start counting against him. Because he's had like 18 straight games where he's looked more like a middle-of-the-pack quarterback than an elite quarterback. And I'm not saying he's washed. I'm not saying any of that. But maybe we should monitor Cam Newton. Cam Newton declined a lot faster than we thought. And Cam and Russ are only a year apart. Cam was drafted in 2011. Russ was drafted in 2012. Is it possible that Russ is going to be still good, but more middle of the pack good, and maybe athletically declines a lot faster than we expect? I don't know, but it's worth wondering. And he's had enough issues with injuries and enough bad games. I think it's interesting to start talking about it. But yes, I pay Tua a rookie contract. I would have to pay Russ $40 million, and I would have to trade first-round picks to get Russ. And I'm not even sure that I'm guaranteed elite quarterback play. No, thank you. I don't want that, because I need the guarantee of elite quarterback play to offset the cap issues and the roster building issues it presents. So if Watson didn't have any of the baggage, then yeah, I can see that. He's young. I'm guaranteed elite quarterback play. I can deal with the money. Same with Aaron Rodgers. He's not young, but I can deal with – I know I'm guaranteed elite quarterback play. I'll take it. I'll deal with the roster issues. I won't deal with that with Russ, because I don't want to have to complain a year from now if the team is like the Seahawks and their offensive line isn't that good and their second receiver is hurt and Russ can't elevate. Like, I don't want to deal with that, especially not when you're paying the quarterback $40 million. So I don't want Russ. I want Rodgers. I don't want Deshaun Watson. That is my official stance on Tua. And I don't think they would replace him for anybody else. I don't see the point in replacing Tua with a Jimmy G. I think they're similar players at this point in Tua's career. Like, I don't see what the point in that is. There's no upside with Jimmy G. There's upside with Tua. So this game matters. That was a very long rant. I said I would make it concise, and of course I did not, because I never do. And I think I'm scared about this game. I'm really scared that they're going to quit. I'm scared that they're going to quit, get destroyed, and then I'm going to be embarrassed on Sunday again. That really, really scares me, because if that happens, that means changes are coming, whether it's Tua, whether it's Flores, whether it's Greer. I promise you, if they get destroyed, the Tua, Flores, Greer triumvirate is not coming back. Whether one of those pieces change, two of those pieces change, three of those pieces change, we'll see. But if they get destroyed, I do not think all three are coming back. And for that reason, I'm concerned. But part of me is just scared as a fan, because I'm scared of getting hurt. I think logically, from a football perspective, the Dolphins defense plays better at home. The Dolphins, Duke Johnson, it might be that's something I would tell you Patriots fans to watch out for. Duke Johnson. You guys probably didn't watch this game, but when the Dolphins played the Jets 2 weeks ago at home, Duke Johnson played college football at the University of Miami. He went to high school at Norland, which is only like 15 minutes away from the Hard Rock Stadium. He's a local Miami hero, a fan favorite. They signed him to the practice squad. He played against the Jets. He had 100 yards and 2 touchdowns. Danny's probably going to scream that it's a fluke because he played the Jets. Last week against the Titans, he averaged 7 yards per carry. He had 7 carries for 50 yards, 7 yards per carry. When Duke Johnson runs at Hard Rock Stadium, when he was in college, the entire home fans would chant Duke in loud unison. And having been to the Jets game a few weeks ago, like it you could feel it in the stadium. It was energizing. It was uplifting. It motivated the team. The entire arena is chanting in unison for their hometown hero. He's certainly going to get up for this game. He's playing for his NFL future. And if he could do something similar to that, I think that could motivate and energize the team. If they're down by like 14 points and they're shrugging their shoulders, they're starting to get concerned, I think he can kind of supercharge the atmosphere a little bit. So he's someone I would watch for in that game. I think Dolphins cover, Patriots win is probably correct. If I'm being objective, the Patriots have been the better team this year. That's what all the metrics say. They've been the better team this year. Kind of like how last year we beat the Patriots in week one. I mean, no, the Patriots beat the Dolphins in week one in 2020. And then in the rematch in December, the Dolphins got the win back, as we say in pro wrestling. That's what it kind of feels like here, especially if the Patriots are going to try. I'm going to predict the Dolphins cover because logic tells me they play better at home. It's a division game. They're going to fight. They're going to do what they can. So, yeah, I agree with you in short. But I will say I am worried if they don't fight, because if they don't fight, I think a lot of changes are coming. So, please, for the love of God, Dolphins, fight. Don't get your asses kicked. That is my rant.
It's all good. It's all good. That was a lot to digest. I'm going to basically I have something I want to say about the Dolphins. You guys right now, I feel like you're like the Arizona Cardinals, but a year behind.
Yeah.
Like, you know, this year where it, like, you know how last year for them it started off hot, but then they cooled down towards the end and stuff? I feel like you guys are the opposite. How, look, Tua got hurt at the beginning of the season, so then it was kind of shaky, but then you bounced back. But then there's those couple of key games down the stretch where you needed to win to keep your hopes alive that you lost. But I think next year is the year where you take your leap. My whole thing with you guys, too, is look, this is truly the third – this is I would only say the second year of the rebuild, because 2019 was technically the teardown. And then 2020, look, you guys managed to get some wins you didn't think you did, and then you guys finished 10-6 just on the outside looking in. I think the future is bright in Miami. I think it would be wrong to get rid of Chris Greer and Brian Flores this year, but I will say this. Yeah. Also, going to say this about Matt Rhule, too. I think for next year, you're going to be in Brian Flores is going to be in that, you know, Cliff Kingsbury, Zach Taylor situation where it's like, okay, it's time to see results or it's time to get out. Meanwhile, Matt Rhule, I think he's going to be brought back and he's going to be fired by midseason. I don't have anything else to add to this game. Just for me, look, I just want the Patriots to come out of this game not injured. I want them to look good going into the playoffs, because I think this game is a true indicator of what Patriots team we can see in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think it's a big game for them too. And let's watch Mac Jones a little bit here, because, you know, obviously the Jaguars game was like, you know, it's the Jaguars, to say the least. But a few weeks before that, the offense was kind of struggling a little bit, at least the passing offense. I know the backs were still playing well. So let's keep an eye on that. He played well against this defense in week one. Is he going to do that again? Like, that's what I want to see, because the Dolphins are going to play. Dolphins have no injuries this week. Like, all their guys are playing.
Yeah, I saw that too. But that's just my whole thing about Miami. The only other thing I wanted to ask you quickly. The only thing I was going to say before we get to the Natty is the only GM I could see getting fired besides Gettleman is probably Spielman from Minnesota, but Ryan Pace is an obvious one.
Yeah, I would think those guys should be fired in tandem with their head coach. I didn't really get to say it. Like, I think Mike Zimmer is going to be fired, but I think he's a good coach. I think he's
he'll get
not
a decent job next year.
Yeah, and he will. He's gotten some bad luck with quarterbacks too. Like, I think his system and Kirk Cousins playing with so many talented players makes him look better than he is. So maybe he goes the Dan Quinn route. He becomes a DC. He becomes like a rock star DC for somebody. And then the next year, he maybe gets a head coaching job. So
Exactly. And the only thing I have to say about the national championship, I think, look, part of me thought we were going to get Michigan and Alabama. We didn't. Look, Cincinnati, I think the stage was a little too big for them. And for Michigan, they just didn't seem like they were ready to play.
They couldn't match their physicality either. Like,
Aiden Hutchinson's give a shit meter also was at like 2. He did not look like he was trying the entire game.
They look like a team that their Super Bowl was beating Ohio State and winning the Big Ten. Like, and that this was all like extra credit is what it looked like.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, it's like, hey, if you're going to get a 90 on this assignment, but if you do the extra work, you can get a 95. And you're like, nah, it's okay.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, I'm going to say this though. I faded Alabama twice this year. I'm not making that same mistake. I got to go Alabama to win, but at the same time, too, I like Georgia +3. I think this is a very close game. I don't think this is like the SEC championship. I think this is a very close game that comes down to the wire. I don't even want to bet spread or money line. I want to do over-under, which I think is a 52. And you know what? If it's 52, give me those points. Give me the point.
I think, yeah, I said it on the last podcast that I had with you a few weeks back about this before the Dolphins played the Saints. And I'll say it again. I think Georgia wins. I think Georgia avenges their demons and finally beats Bama. I also think it's going to be close. And look, I'm just going by the resumes. I think Georgia's been the better team. Alabama struggled with a lot of SEC teams. They struggled with Florida. They struggled with Auburn. They struggled with LSU. They struggled with Arkansas. Georgia didn't really struggle with anybody. They dominated everybody all year long. Now, obviously, Bama blew them out in the title game. I am not trying to be ignorant of that. I very, 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 very much understand that. I think Georgia slays those demons. I think it's hard to beat this Georgia team twice. I think if Georgia loses this game, it's like going to be devastating for them. Like, I don't know how they would recover from it. Like, there's only so many times you're going to get this chance. You got to capitalize on them one of those times. So kind of speaking with my heart here a little bit, but I think Georgia's been the better team. I think Georgia wins the rematch. Would not surprise me at all. It is Nick Saban. It is Alabama if they find a way again. So, yeah.
Exactly. One other point I want to say about Michigan, you know what Michigan reminded me of? What? One thing about it now, because obviously I saw Ajabo, Aiden Hutchinson, I believe. I also got a notification while we were recording from The Athletic that where Daxton Hill was declared for the draft as well.
Yeah.
The Michigan team right now reminds me of the 2019 Toronto Raptors.
2019 Toronto Raptors?
The Kawhi Raptors.
Yes. I see what you mean.
You know, yeah. Where like they finally... Like, for years, the Raptors were over trying to slay that dragon of winning a championship. They got close, beating Ohio State, but then they never got the job done. But they finally got over those hurdles and won. And then eventually, Kawhi left, Danny Green left, and then we haven't been the same since. I think Michigan's going to be like that, because I think next year for the Big Ten, I think it's Ohio State's to lose at this point already to say.
Yeah, because their best receiver was not any of the guys in the draft. It was Jaxon Smith-Njigba, and he's coming back. And CJ Stroud is coming back, and Michigan's losing a lot of guys. So yeah, I would agree with you. But hey, they especially if Harbaugh leaves. If Harbaugh leaves, like, you know, yeah, like they're definitely gonna take a step back here.
Oh, but other take too though, that both games on New Year's Day, the Rose Bowl and the Sugar Bowl, were better than both semifinals.
Yeah, Yeah, I fully agree with that. The semifinals were weak. Hopefully this year, I understand everyone's like kind of complaining that it's blowouts every year. It's not always. It's just been kind of recently. Like in 2019, Clemson and Ohio State had a great, great, great game. That was a lot of fun that Clemson won at the very, very end when Fields got picked off in the end zone. So hopefully we can get better luck next year and get some better semifinal matchups.
Hopefully, because next year is going to be the back to the Peach Bowl and the Fiesta Bowl next year for the semifinals. And I believe the finals is in L.A. next year. Don't quote me on that. I believe it's L.A. and then Houston. I still find it weird that it's Indianapolis, but I guess it is what it is.
Yeah, very strange decision, but people like domes.
Exactly. Just because most of the game, I believe all the games have been in southern climates. Like, I want to say Dallas, Phoenix, Tampa, Atlanta, San Francisco, and then Miami. Also New Orleans. Like, I feel like the national championship should always be there, but it wouldn't shock me at the same time too. Hey, if Minnesota got one eventually, if there's all these other markets, like I think Vegas is going to have one sooner than later.
Yeah, I would agree with you. That makes a lot of sense. And Miami's getting one soon, too soon, in a few years.
They're getting another? Did more get announced? Or?
Yeah, I saw today Vegas and Miami are getting the national title game, but it was announced today.
Oh, okay. Because I know college. Sorry for the dead air, folks, but I have to Google this because I'm actually genuinely curious. I just want to see because I know. Let's see here.
I saw you. You can go to Brett McMurphy's Twitter. That's where I got it from.
Oh, I see it right here. 2025 is in Vegas, and then 26 is in Miami. I get Miami getting 26 just because of probably they won't the Rose Bowl won't be a factor that the not Rose Bowl excuse me the Orange Bowl won't be a factor and also too probably because they couldn't properly have one last year.
Yeah, that would be a good way to that'd be a good way to put it.
Yeah, that's the only way I can see around there. But I think with that, I think you know what, that's the last podcast for the NFL regular season. Big Rat, we'll definitely get you back on in the playoffs, folks. If you haven't heard already, I'm probably going to start doing some Twitch stuff soon, so stay tuned to that. That might be football and other sports too, maybe a little more betting-centered. But playoffs, don't worry, content's going to be pumping out. I'm going to be bringing the best of the best for guests on. And even, too, I may have a few tricks up my sleeve that may be getting announced in the next few weeks. But for Big Rat, for myself, enjoy Week 18. Big Rat, it was a blast having you on, as always.
It was a blast. I hope your favorite team loses this weekend, but it was fun. And more than anything... Let's hope for some really good playoff matchups and a good Sunday night game.
That's all I hope for. Hopefully we can get good football all weekend long. Well, anyway, folks, that's going to do it here for episode number 143 of YWC Football Talk. I'll see you guys in the postseason. And Big Rat, I hope your favorite team loses too.
Do, did, will, the Story of People podcast is now available on the Crier Media Network. The first 5 episodes are here and feature some incredible guests that fit into one or all 3 of those categories. Ready? Tara Sloan from the San Jose Sharks, Undercurrent podcast at NBC Sports. Marianne Iveson from Iveson Voice and the Let's Take This Outside podcast to talk about the world of outdoors as well as voiceover land. Ariana Hunsicker, future Canadian Paralympic swimmer, already winning tons of awards for this country. Scott McGregor from the Hot Wallet podcast to dumb down the world of crypto, Bitcoin, and NFTs so you don't have to. And Jackie Holowaty from Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle, Washington, the first net zero carbon certified arena on the planet. Wherever you get your pods, wherever you watch your pods, and on the Crier Media Network.
I'm Jeff Woods, and I'm shining a light on music and the rock stars who make it.
He just was one of those people. He stood out.
He was a magic guy. He really was a magic guy. We all have force. He had the same amount of force as we all have.
This was before Led Zeppelin. Robert was full on. I mean, he was Led Zeppelin without the band behind him. He had the hair, the jeans, the whole thing, you know. And he was amazing.
The Records and Rockstars podcast, heard around the world and yours to hear wherever you get podcasts. All the episodes from JeffWoodsRadio.com.